Thursday, the 10th of December, Kof Gimel Kislev, Rabbi Yonas and Chodi, Wills, the Halachic Way.
Okay, good morning, everybody. Change of topic this time. It's not a subject that we like to feel comfortable to deal with. However, it's not advisable to push it off or to delay discussing it. It's never too early and often too late. And in reality, a person's demise is usually the survivor's affair. And it's often a shame that the testator himself, the person who's dying, is not around at the time to sort out the mess that he may leave around. Okay, what we're trying to achieve is a way where we can leave our estate to our survivors, to our children, in a way that is valid according to halacha. First of all, just quickly stipulate the Torah's rule of how a person's estate is to be distributed after 120 is that sons inherit, with the eldest son, the Bechor, taking a double portion of his father's estate, but not of his mother's estate. Daughters do not inherit anything according to the Torah. A husband inherits from his wife, but a wife does not inherit from her husband. She's entitled to maintenance and support from the estate up to the same sort of standard that she was used to during their lifetime, during the husband's lifetime. Very often, I mean, take an example from this week's Sedra, the Yaakov treated Yosef differentiated in his treatment of Yosef, and Chazal say that through that resulted in the Shibud Mitzrayim and the jealousy of his brothers. It's often a person would like to leave all his estate equally to all his children, including the daughters. And certainly if he is the first to die, he would like to leave his estate to his wife rather than to his any of his children, the sons. Is that valid in halacha? Is there a way to do that? And what does one need to be aware of in order to achieve that? Firstly, it's important to realize that according to the Torah, at the moment of death, a person has no longer any jurisdiction over his assets. The way the Torah stipulates that they should be distributed is like we mentioned. And a person cannot make any kinyonim, there's no shtar, you cannot transfer anything. After 120, the nepotim automatically would go to the Torah Yoshim, i.e. if a father would die leaving a wife and children, the sons would inherit his estate equally with the Bechor taking a double portion. And that is it. Any interference with that is, on the face of it, contrary to the way the Torah stipulates.
But even if he didn't leave a will?
That would be the... Now, the question would be, if a person would leave a will, which would be valid according to English law, or we'll see even if it's valid according to halacha, but if it, an English law, a will valid according to English law, would that contravene the halakha of the Torah? That is taking effect after death. The stipulations that a person makes in his will, his wishes, are what is to happen with his nechasim after 120. After 120, it's too late in halakha to deal with your assets. The sons inherit automatically. That's what the Torah says. So therefore, a will that a person would write in his lifetime, when he's fully conscious, fully aware of everything that's going on, he knows exactly what is in estate, may be 100% valid in English law, but it contravenes the halacha. So what is that? What can be done, and what should be done? And to leave it in that situation, you are asking for a problem, because it's likely that the sons, or there's a possibility, even though maybe not likely, but there's a possibility that the sons would say, we are entitled to the estate, and we're not going to let our sisters share anything. The halacha is on our side, and that's what we want to do. And there are bati dinim who will follow that course of action. Okay. First thing to know is the halacha of Dina de Machus Dina is often quoted as a source for relying on English will and the validity of an English will according to halacha. The Rambam brings that the maxim of dina de machus adina, the principle of dina de machus adina, is not valid when it comes to Yerusha. It's only valid when it in reference to taxation, to anything that is for the benefit of the Malchus. But when we're dealing with two Yisraelim in a civil matter, the jurisdiction of the host country is not valid. Because if so, Batla Dine Yisrael is the Lashon of the Ramah. And although there's huge controversy about the principle of Dina Machus Dina and its applicability in these circumstances, but certainly cannot rely on that rule to validate the English will according to halacha. And as I said, the Ramah says clearly that it does not apply between Yisraelim when it comes to Yerusha. So it's not something that we can rely on to for making a will, so that should be valid in halacha. Another mitzvah we have is the mitzvah of kibud avim. It's a mitzvah. The mitzvah of kibud avim doesn't make any kinyanim. In order for a person's assets to be distributed according to halacha, you have to have made a kinyan. The mitzvah of kibud avim is a mitzvah that perhaps is a mitzvah on the children to fulfill, but they're certainly not bound monetarily as well. They don't have any legal commitment to fulfill those duties. And even having said that, Rabbi Kivega says clearly, he leaves the Batarachian, that the mitzvah of kibud avim is not a mitzvah for which the children have to use their own resources. Mitzvah of kibud avim is at the expense of the parents, not at the expense of the children. So Rabbi Kivega leaves Batarachian that whether if the sons inherit Minatayra, it's now their money. We want to use the mitzvah of kibud avim to say that they should fulfill their father's or mother's wishes by giving some of their estate, which is rightfully theirs, to their sisters. Now that is using their own money to fulfill the mitzvah of kibud avim. And Rabbi Kivega is not certain at all whether that is valid. So therefore, if it would apply after death, why not? In many ways it does. It doesn't help then. You cannot rely on the mitzvah of kibud avim to rely that the sons would fulfill your wishes. Okay. Another very, very important principle to be aware of is the principle of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. Mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames is again a mitzvah. It's an ethical and moral thing to do. But it's not a binding thing. The assets are not yours, as it were. It's a mitzvah. Now, whether this applies or not depends on two things. Firstly, a mitzvah is never true if it contravenes the halacha. If the parent tells you to do something which is against the Torah, you don't have a mitzvah of kibud avim to listen to the parent. A mitzvah to be mekayim divrei ames can only be valid if what the parent is telling you to do is according to halacha. So we first have to establish whether the wishes of the testator, the father, is according to halacha for there to be a mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. Secondly, there's two opinions in Shulchan Aruch as to when we apply the rule of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames. Firstly, the first opinion is that if the father just specifies what his wishes are to be, and he appoints a third party to implement those wishes, that is enough for the rule of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames to apply. However, the Mechaber brings a second opinion, the Ramah follows the second opinion, that we only apply the rule of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames if the assets with which we want to use to fulfill that mitzvah have actually been transferred physically to a third party, and that third party would have the ability to then distribute those assets. Only then do we apply the rule of mitzvah l'kayim divrei ames, which means that if father wants to give nechasim to his daughter, he would physically have to transfer those nechazim in his lifetime to the third party, with the specific intention that that third party would then distribute his assets to his children after 100, to his daughter after 120. That is called hushlash, that the nechazim have to be transferred to a third party. Hushlash b'yad shlish. And only then do we apply the rule of Mitzvah divrames, which means that it is not simple in a person's lifetime to be able to fulfill that by transferring his assets to a third party. How does one achieve that? Yeah, it would have to be done in a way that is valid according to halacha. You'd have to make a proper kinyan, you have to transfer it to the third party. How do you transfer a house that you're still living in that is still yours? What about bank accounts? Loans? It's not easy to transfer those nechassim to a third party. So whether the rule of mitzvah l'chaim divrei ames applies at all would depend on whether it is what you want to do is according to halacha, which we have to establish still. And even then, it's only if you've transferred the nechassim to a third party. So again, not reliable as a means of relying on the halacha. Thank you. However, there is a famous psak from Rav Padua, and it's known as Rav Padua's view, that if a person creates a will that is valid according to English law, and in that will he appoints a third party, thank you, he appoints an executor to fulfill those wishes, and he knows 100% that in English law that those wishes would be complied with, that is as if he would have transferred his nechazim to a third party. Rav Padua explains that the main reason why we need the shlish is to be sure of the testator's wishes, to be sure of what the father wanted to do. Transferring those nechazim, creating an English will, and appointing an executor who will distribute, and we know we have the weight of the English law that those assets would be distributed in that way, is equivalent of transferring those nechazim to a shlish. And therefore, according to Rav Padua, we have mimakayim the halacha of transferring to a shlish, and the rule of mitzvah l'chaim divrei ames would apply, provided the distribution is still kulun to halacha. Now, not everyone agrees with that view. Chasam Sofer is the other view that is known as the leading posek who takes the other view, that it doesn't work. Mitzvah l'chaim divrei ames is only works if you actually transfer to a shlish, and by an English will does not achieve that. So we have those two views. It's very important to remember that there are these two views, and we have to, in order to ensure the validity of our will, we have to comply with everything. But for the moment, according to Rav Padua, it's clear that an English will has the status of hushlash, and the rule of mitzvah l'chaim divrei ames would apply.
Can I just ask you, the third party could be one of the inheritors?
Yes.
Yes, did you say yes?
Yes. Actually, I'm not sure. As far as, you're asking halacha.
I'll
tell you that back. No. In English, it could be, but not in halacha. Yeah. See, you have a problem like this. let's leave it a no for now. If that's okay. Okay. As far as the actual distribution, what we're trying to do is distribute the whole estate equally among the boys and the girls, seemingly contrary to what the Torah says. There's an issa to be mavir nachalot from a yoresh to a non-yoresh, or even perhaps within a yoresh to take away what is his entitlement could be an issa. Now there is again two different views among the poskim into the following case. Can you leave something that you distribute according to halacha, and then the rest distribute equally. So that you haven't taken away what is completely the entitlement of the Torah Yerushim, you've left them something according to Halacha, may you then distribute the rest equally. So which would mean that if a person wanted to distribute his Nechasim to his sons and his daughters, can he leave a certain amount only to his sons, and if he has a Bechor, then the Bechor from the father would take a double portion from the father's estate, so he would take a double portion within that allocated sum, and then the remaining parts of the estate distribute equally according to all the children. Again, we have the view of Rav Padua. It's not his own view, it goes back to the Bala Itur. It's quoted in the Tashbant, the Ketzos brings it, that provided you leave something, and the words of the Bala Itur is Dalet Zuz, which in the Tshuva of Rav Moshe said that $1,000 today, which was a few years ago now, was more than what Dalet Zuz was at that time. But if you leave that amount with which to be Mekayim the Yerushim in our Torah, you may then distribute the rest of your estate equally, and you will not have transgressed the Isser of being Ma'avir Nachla. So these two psakim are a padra. A, that an English will is valid according to halacha if you appoint executors using the principle of mitzvah mekayim divrei ames, and you allocate something which according to Rav Padua's words were dovah hogun, a chelek hogun, a significant amount. He didn't specify what that amount should be. Then you may distribute the rest of the estate equally, and the will would be valid according to halacha as well. Which would mean that if we take the example of £1,000, if you have three sons and one of them is Bechor, you leave each son £1,000 and the Bechor £2,000. In the case of the death of the father, there's no pishnaim in the case of the mother, so from the mother's estate, she would also leave to each son £1,000. Then, according to Rav Padua, it's permitted to then distribute the rest of the estate equally according to all the children. It's valid with a will that will be valid in English law, and the brula mitzvah divrei ames would be an ethical and moral thing that the children would have to do. It's a mitzvah on them. It wouldn't apply necessarily to katanim if they are katanim at the time of the death, but it's also a mitzvah that you can force them to comply with. The assets are still the, as far as the halacha goes, the sons would then have a mitzvah to transfer those assets to their sisters. Okay. It's very important to note that not everyone goes along with that view. As we said before, there is the view of the Chasam Sofer that mitzvah l'kam divrei ames is not applicable, and you also have the view of the other shitta that says that if you're shy and miktsas, you leave something that is to be distributed according to halacha that is not enough to prevent you being over the iso transfer in nachla. You have to leave everything according to the Torah, and you have no way after death to distribute your nechasim not according to the principles of the Torah. So what do? We have to take into account the other view, because it is possible for one son to say and to go to a Beis Din who will follow his view and say, I follow the view that we don't accept Rav Padua's Pesach, I follow the view that I'm entitled to the whole thing, it's mine, anyone who takes it away from me, or my sisters take it away from me, they are Ganovim, and I have the Halacha on my side. So we have to take that possibility. It may be a remote possibility. No father ever thinks that their son would ever do such a thing. History has shown that that isn't the case. Okay. So what do? We have other methods within halacha that we can transfer assets during one's lifetime. That is the only thing that one has, what one can do according to this view. And you have two options. You have an option of to give a matona now, of the actual capital now, when you, at any time you like, during your lifetime, you give the assets now. And the peros, the ability to enjoy those assets, the benefit of those assets, after 120. And there's some conditions that you have to make within that gift that that are effective only on those nechassim that are going to be in your estate at that time. You also put in a clause that entitles you to be chayzer, to retract from the gift. But in principle, what you're doing is you're making a valid gift according to halacha in your lifetime, either by giving the capital today and the pay raise after 120, or there's another way, and that is you can give the capital today to Bichal Shah Achaz Kaidam Association, Bichal 1 hour before my death. It's a similar method. They both involve the principle of lifetime gifts, which have to be made according to halacha. What is very important to know with, if one wants to adopt this method, is that it only works on assets you have at the time you make the gift. It doesn't work for assets that will come into your estate subsequently. Those are Dovah Shalai Balaylam, and perhaps cash in a bank would be considered Dovah Shalai Balaylam. Other assets that you don't have, maybe you'd sell a property, buy something else. Again, that wasn't in your estate at the time. You have to be very careful to then repeat that gift every so often, and you have to be aware of what has come into your estate since the original gift. So it does work, but it has to be considered carefully. Also doesn't work for children who are not yet born at the time you made the original gift, because they are lo bolo ilo. So it has to be used carefully, but it does work. It's useful particularly for perhaps an older person whose assets aren't going to change so much. It's unlikely that there'll be other children being born, or there could always be grandchildren, but has to be borne in mind. The other way that is recommended and does solve this problem is the following. The Gemara brings a very interesting story about a convert who wanted to give his nechassim over to his children, and the Gemara lists a whole list of possible methods that he could have done that. And the Gemara concludes with a following thing. Why couldn't he have done the following? There is a kinyan called a kinyan oidisa, which is a kinyan ischaivus, which means I can create an indebtedness in my lifetime to whoever I want. I can say, I owe you £1,000. And I mechayev myself to give you £1,000, and it's clear that such a debt never existed, and I can nevertheless make such a claim, validate it according to halacha, charge all my nechassim to fulfill that debt, and you have a right to claim from me £1,000. That's called the kinyan oidisa, kinyan ischaivus, and that is 100% valid in halacha. The suggestion is like this. A person should work out the potential value, if possible, of his estate after 120. Let's take an ordinary person who has a house in Golders Green, perhaps worth £500,000, £750,000. He has some investments, he has some cash. Let's just give an example. Average person would have an estate worth £1 million. Okay. At his death, it may be worth £2 million or £1.5 million. So what you can say is like this. I create a debt today, in my lifetime, to my wife and my daughters. They are the monetary yorshim. And I can say, I mischayev myself to give you £2 million to be chal an hour before my death, after 120. Now that comes with a condition. The condition is like this. We make a will which is valid according to halacha, according to Rav Padua, so that we at least have that on our side. And we say, the condition is, if my sons comply with the terms of my last will, then the debt that I've created in my lifetime to my wife and daughters is null and void. However, if my sons challenge the terms of my will, and they claim their rights according to halacha in such a basin that would give them those rights, then the debt that I have created now is valid and completely chal, and my estate carries with it a debt of £2 million to my daughter, my wife and daughters, and all my assets are charged to fulfill that debt. The effect of that is that if the sons actually do that, there's nothing left in the estate for them to have. So it's like an insurance policy, if you like, that it prevents the sons ever going to a Beis Din and making such a claim. Because if they do, then the estate carries with it a debt that they are obliged to pay, because it's chal before the death, and there's nothing left for them. So it prevents them making such a claim. And that is 100% valid in halacha. It has been raised that it is an unspecified amount. We don't quite know what that estate is going to be, but we can specify an amount. We can say we have to estimate what that estate could be worth, and we create a debt with that amount. If the estate increases, we have to give them more money. We have to make another eschivus. And that prevents the sons from challenging the will, and validates the distribution according to the way you wanted to do it. And again, you don't have the isser of being ma'avir nachala, because you can do whatever you like in your lifetime. You can give away your assets in your lifetime to whoever you want. And therefore, it's a valid means of achieving your intentions.
So again, I have documents and say I give away all my assets half an hour before death according to the terms of my will.
You can. That is the Masana Chaim.
So there'd be no argument in Beis Din, and in legal court there'd be a will.
That is one of the options. That's called the Matana Mechaim. It only works on assets you have at the time you make the will. Well, at the time you make that condition.
At the time when you make the will.
Make it. Yes.
By all my assets at the time.
It's only valid on those assets that are in existence an hour before your death, that were also in existence when you made the gift. That is the halacha. All other gifts are lo bala olam at that time, and it's invalid.
Insurance policies from that definition.
What did you say, sorry?
Insurance policies.
You can do an insurance policy.
Is that the
What do you mean, the debt? What do you say? Sorry.
Insurance policy.
Oh, our insurance policy is lo bala olam. Okay. It depends who it's paid out to at the end of the day. We can. You're talking about a life insurance policy.
Yeah.
Yeah, the best way to do a life insurance policy from taxation point of view is to make it being paid to, not to your estate, but to your wife or your children. So that it automatically goes into their estate, not into your estate. It's actually a yeah, it's a gift made in a lifetime. You created it in your lifetime. No, you make it now in your life. You create the life policy in your lifetime that will pay out at a certain point. That to the beneficiaries. From a taxation point of view, don't make it go into your own estate. Now, this is something that I've been doing now for a few years now. We're doing wills according to the English law, validate them according to halacha, and I provide this service. So that's a small caveat if anyone... There are Arnold here is also a professional lawyer. He can help you too. Anyone got any questions?
Who charges less?
Okay, so I would encourage you to do something. To do nothing is not really an option. If you do nothing, you have the following problem. If you do nothing, the English law is like this. That we'll take a husband and wife with children. The English law is that from each of the spouse's estates, and we have to clarify what is in their estate, but from whatever their estate is, the first £250,000 goes to the surviving spouse. Of the rest, it's divided in two. The surviving spouse has a lifetime interest in half, and the children have equal share in the other half during the spouse's lifetime, surviving spouse's lifetime, and on death get the other half. That is the position in English law if one doesn't make a will. Now that is contrary to the halacha, and in this case, you have nothing that is on your side. You have the halacha that is against you, i.e. if you want to distribute your assets equally to all your children, and you don't have a will that is valid according to Rav Padua. So it's not a good situation to be in. Better if you want your estate to be distributed according to halacha, 100% according to halacha, let's say you want it to be distributed only to the boys, make an English will that is that does that distribution, should be valid to give it to the boys. But doing nothing is not a sensible option to have. If you want to do something that is treats all your children equally, then the recommended approach is to make an English will, give something to the Torah Yerushim. So that would mean like this. In the case of the father's death, if there's Bechor, you give, let's say, £1,000 or Dovah Choshev. Actually, there's a range in the Poskim as to what that Dovah Choshev is. Some say 10%, some say 20%. But for the purpose of the discussion, we'll take the smallest amount, which is, let's say, £1,000. Your elder son will get a double portion, £2,000. Each of your other sons gets £1,000. In the case of the wife's estate, then if she's the first to die, the husband is the Torah Yoresh, and therefore there's no need to give anything to the sons in that case, if you want to give everything to the surviving spouse on the first death, because the husband is the Torah Yoresh in that case. Not so if the husband is the first to die, because then the sons are the Torah Yoreshim, and if you want to give everything to the surviving spouse on the first death, better give the sons something, and then give the rest to surviving spouse, and then on the surviving spouse death, distribute everything equally, and again, give something to the boys. And in together with that, do a hischaivus, which is sometimes referred to as a shtar chatzizacha. The reason why it's called that is because the Ramah brings that many years ago, that's what people used to do. At the time when they wanted to marry off their daughters, they would write them a document that entitled the daughters to half the amount that a son would get on death. And that would be their dowry, and that would encourage potential husbands. And they wrote that document together with the hischaivus that we mentioned, that would force the sons to pay that on death. And that's why this document is often referred to as the Shtar Chatzizacha, because it was traditional that they gave the daughters half the value that they gave the sons. And the reason why it was half was because if you take a Bechor who got double, an ordinary son got one portion, and they gave the daughters half. But the actual amount that one leaves to the daughters doesn't have to be a half, it can be an equal amount, provided we comply with giving at least something to the boys. And that's why if we make a chayvus which is more than the value of the estate to the girls and to the wife, we then have covered that option and can ensure that our sons are going to, or have no choice in fulfilling our wishes. Ronnie, you have a question?
Is it very expensive to update it, say, every year or 2 years?
Oh, we'll talk about that soon. Okay.